Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. On the local news roundup, voters go to the polls, say yes to the $2.5 billion school bonds, yes to incumbents on Charlotte City Council, call for changes on the school board, but some races remain too close to call. After a second season that took Charlotte FC to the playoffs, the club fires the head coach and his assistant. CMPD begins a new campaign to alert young people about the dangers of fentanyl. Brook Sandwich House, a Charlotte staple, goes up for sale. The state auditor is indicted and resigns. And the drought causes a major fire in Watauga County. Here to discuss those stories and more is Steve Harrison, WFAE's politics reporter. Joe Bruno reports for WSOC-TV. Mary Ramsey is with us. She is a local government accountability reporter, something in short supply for the Charlotte Observer. And Eric Spanberg is managing editor of the Charlotte Business Journal. Good morning and welcome to you all.
Good morning.
Morning.
And Mary, I'm going to welcome you personally because I know you were on the show with when Eric hosted a couple of weeks ago, but we've never met till this morning. Thank you for being here. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. We had municipal elections all over the area on Tuesday, but even now on Friday morning, there are some races that remain too close to call. We'll get to those in a moment, but let's begin with Charlotte, where the mayor's race was a foregone conclusion. It's Vi Lyles for another 2 years.
2 years we have to make this a better place for everyone. And I am surely certain that that is something that we will and can do.
Now, maybe I wasn't paying attention, but I think that's the first thing I've heard the mayor say in this entire campaign. She had no real competition. So did she really campaign at all, Steve?
I don't think so. I mean, I never got a piece of mail or saw an event. And while she was out in the primary, remember in that district race in September, you know, there was really no need. I didn't see her anywhere. I mean, Joe, Eric, Mary.
She did a Telemundo forum at our station. And certainly, I think a lot of her efforts were more on just in general getting people to vote. She wasn't really sweating this race.
So let's talk about, yeah, well, why should she? She was pretty much it. But was she specific at all in that speech about what she plans to do to make this a, quote, better place for everyone?
Yeah, I was at the Mecklenburg Democrat Party Tuesday night, and frankly, it was a pretty general speech. A lot of thanking the team, thanking the party for doing a lot of organizing in the last year to really get up and running, both for Charlotte elections as well as other races throughout Mecklenburg County. So frankly, not as specifics related to what her next term will include.
Although I do think it's interesting that in the last, 6-9 months, she has said that the final piece of business, unfinished business for her is the transit plan, which, as we know, has, stuck in neutral is probably a kind assessment. So that's going to be interesting to see what she can get done, because many people think this will be her last term.
Except we do have that recent development with the Red Line and the possible use of Norfolk Southern tracks. Joe?
She has like three huge accomplishments to her legacy as mayor: the Unified Development Ordinance, affordable housing, just changing the game with that, $50 million consistently passes. And she also has the racial equity initiative. However, the one piece that is still missing, that is still left that she needs to accomplish, is the transit portion.
So we spent an hour this past Wednesday talking about the election outcome. So we're not going to belabor it, except for when it comes to very close races that remain in question. When we last left our intrepid heroes, incumbent Mayor Woody Washam led challenger Dennis Bilodeau by just 13 votes up in Cornelius. Joe, where does that stand at this hour?
13 votes. There have been at least 8 new mail ballots that have come into the Board of Elections. We still do not know how many provisional votes are designated for each individual race. So going to need probably 20 for Bilodeau to have a shot. Of course, the race will come down to a recount, or there will be a recount no matter what happens.
And in Union County, Bob Janacek was at one point leading his opponent Robert Burns in the Monroe mayor's race by a single vote. Wow. What's happening there?
One new mail ballot has arrived and will be counted on Thursday. There are four candidates that were on the ballot for mayor. So, you know, this could be a vote for one of the other ones, too. There are 362 or 336 provisional ballots that need to be counted in Union County. Again, countywide, so we don't know how many are specific for the Monroe mayoral race. But, yeah, one vote at least will be counted next Thursday.
So Bob Janacek is leading by one vote at the moment. What if it ends up that one of the last votes to be counted is for another candidate and it doesn't change the one vote margin? Is that it, or will they ask for a recount?
There will be a recount, okay. But yeah, Mayor Bob is what it would look like.
So the two candidates may not agree on various issues, but they do agree on one thing, and I think they're right about this, unequivocally, the importance of your vote. And Robert Burns told Channel 9 that the closeness of this vote proves that.
It proves more than anything that your vote matters. It's shocking how many people don't realize how much your voice matters. And that's the beauty of our democracy, is that it absolutely does.
And his opponent, former CMPD officer Bob Janacek, who is in the lead by one vote, agrees.
Whether I win or lose, I think the fact that people always say, well, my vote doesn't count, this is a perfect example of one vote does count.
And here's an interesting fact, Joe. What happens if it ends up that additional vote that they're going to count makes this a tie? What happens then?
State law says the winner is chosen by luck or chance. So that could mean a coin flip, or it could mean a name is drawn out of a hat. The last time a tie happened in Mecklenburg County was 2003. There was a little known man by the name of Tom Tillis who tied for a spot on the Cornelius Town Board with John Bensman, I believe his name was. And it wasn't whether he would be elected to the town board. It was whether he would get a 4-year term or a 2-year term. So the Board of Elections found the oldest voter in Cornelius and had him pick a name out of the hat. And Mr. Bensman won a 4-year term. Tillis got the 2-year term. And you know what? What would happen if Tillis got a 4-year term instead of a 2-year term? Would that have changed his trajectory to U.S. Senate? So many things to think about. But
I think they should have. Crazy. I think they should have to draw rocks or make fire. That's a reference to Survivor.
I have made fire.
So in Pineville, David Phillips at one point was up by just 28 votes over Ed Samaha in the mayor's race. There, where does that stand, Steve? This morning. Do we know?
I'm going to have to send the Pineville race to Joe. He's been all over
these. Go ahead.
Pineville mayoral race is decided. There won't be any movement with that one. It's the town council race to at-large candidates where the mystery remains.
Meanwhile, something really interesting happened in the Smyrna mayor's race. That's in York County, South Carolina. Frances Faulkner is the incumbent. She ran unopposed. Now, I'm not sure what the population of Smyrna is, but she got 7 votes.
And I love this story.
And 19 people got write-in votes. What's going to happen there?
All right. What does that say? I got an update to this. It's decided. So Smyrna, according to the census, is 58 people. I talked to the person who won, and he thinks it's much less. The guy who won's name is Robert Whitesides Faulkner Jr. He got all 19 write-in votes. He tells me he missed the deadline to get on the ballot, so he had to organize this write-in campaign. He defeated his aunt, Frances Faulkner. His dad also serves on the town council here in Smyrna. And he told me that his aunt wasn't too happy about it, but he thinks everything will end up being okay. Wow. I was trying to get in contact with this guy, and I found some piece of paper online that claimed the town hall phone number was this. I called the number. It was this guy's cell phone. Do you know that you're the mayor right now?
I want to be at that Thanksgiving table this year. That will be interesting. And in Charlotte City Council's hotly contested District 6 race, the jury evidently is still out, although I got a text today from Tariq Bakari, who says it's over. But incumbent Republican Tariq Bakari, who won last year by 357 votes, is ahead by 352 votes. At least he was on election night. And on election night, he essentially claimed victory. Here's what he told his supporters that night.
It's because we spent an amount of money that was given and entrusted to us by our supporters that enabled us to put over 300,000 pieces of mail out there. Over 100,000 live human calls to voters in District 6, and some very creative campaigning at the end. Let's go!
All right, so the creative campaigning, I think, can be tied directly back to Charlotte Talks, because Mr. Bakari and Stephanie Hand, his challenger, were on this show, and toward the end of the show, they got into this disagreement about certain things, but also she mentioned her experience at the airport. So, Steve, what is this campaigning, the creative campaigning that Tariq just referred to?
He is talking about him spending $5,700 on election day to hire a private plane to fly over District 6, carrying a banner that says, do you want the plain truth? Vote Bakari. And that was a reference to this controversy over his opponent, Stephanie Hand, kind of saying it numerous times that she ran airports when, in fact, her job was a really serious, you know, kind of important job as the person running the concessions for the private company at the airport. I mean, so an embellishment on her resume, but in her own right, what she did was very impressive. But Tariq made this an issue again and again in the final days of the campaign. Did that make a difference? I mean, we'll never know, but he pulled out all the stops in trying to get people to talk about it.
And he called it the best money he spent during that entire campaign. But that race, as we said, is not over. Bakari's challenger, Democrat Stephanie Hand, has yet to concede.
It ain't over yet. We're not finished yet.
That was her on election night, and she went on to say that Democrats still had a lot of work to do. Before I ask about what she was referring to, Joe, you may have an answer here. Go ahead.
I would just like to say, while she says the race isn't over, the numbers show that it is. Only 45 mail votes have come in to be counted next Thursday. The provisional ballots will not change the outcome. There's only about 300 countywide in Mecklenburg County. Tariq Bakari has won this seat.
And yet she has not conceded. Is that correct?
Correct.
What did she mean by Democrats still have more work to do? The party itself in electing other candidates or in electing her, Mary? Unmute yourself there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I spoke to Stephanie at that same election night event that the Mecklenburg Democrats hosted where she made those comments. With regard to the election itself, she said she would rely on the data experts in her campaign to assess whether or not provisional or absentee ballots can make a difference. As both Joe and I have reported, numbers don't necessarily look great for her on that front. But with regard to the rest of her comments, she really spoke a lot about the younger members of her campaign and what they mean for the future of the Mecklenburg Democratic Party, their ability to really make a difference in close campaigns such as this moving forward, and also potentially as future candidates themselves.
That's Mary Ramsey, who's a local government reporter for the Charlotte Observer. She's here with Eric Spanberg from the Business Journal, Joe Bruno from WSOC-TV, and Steve Harrison from WFAE. A couple of things to talk about remaining for the election, and then we'll move on to other things, including Charlotte FC firing their latest coach. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on the Local News Roundup on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We were talking about the election, wrapping it up here. We have two Republicans on city council. They were two Republicans last week. There will be two Republicans next year, one being Ed Driggs, who ran unopposed, the other being Tariq Bakari, who is evidently the winner in his district, District 6, a district in which a Democrat has never won. This is going to be his fourth term on council, Steve, and he spent, I think, he says that state Republicans and outside groups pushed the total amount spent by him in that campaign to $400,000. Is that a lot of money for a local district city council race?
It's an astronomical amount of money. I mean, even in the old days, a competitive district race might be $50,000 or $60,000 or $70,000. And now, in city council races, because the Democrats win everything, people are hardly spending any money. I mean, just, you know, a lot of these races are, you know, $5,000-$10,000. So Bakari, you know, he says he spent $200,000 from his own campaign. Again, a huge amount of money for a district race. What, 22,000 people voted overall?
And the spread is 300
more on the plane than most people spend on their campaigns. I'm sorry, Mike.
Yeah, and the spread is 352 votes at the moment. So what does that tell? What does the math tell you about where this district is headed?
I think that, you know, if you go back 10 years ago, 12 years ago, Republicans won District 6 by huge amounts, you know, 30, 40 percentage points. But the district has really changed in terms of not only demographics, but just some of the existing people there are now, maybe because of Trump, have moved away from the Republican Party. So it's going to be harder and harder for a Republican, for Bakari, to win that seat next time or the next Republican after him.
Joe?
It's clear there are Democrats and unaffiliated voters who are voting for Tariq Bakari in this Biden plus 21 district. It is really hard for a Republican to win any race in Charlotte. And if the NCGOP, what I think the NCGOP should be looking at is, what is it that Tariq Bakari is doing? What is his message? What kind of council member is he in terms of working with the other party? And can his message be replicated statewide in some of these other races that they struggle in?
Eric.
I think one of the things that's fascinating about Bakari and his message is that so much of it now is about diversity, diversity of opinion, diversity of thought, because this is such an overwhelmingly Democratic city. And one of the things he said the other night at Selwyn Pub during his celebration as the results came in was he talked a lot about getting Republicans and voters in general to pay attention to local elections and how people are so distracted by national elections, they don't care about local politics, but local politics obviously are the things that affect our lives the most. So I think it's just a really interesting message that he's using.
So this was an off-year municipal election, and for Charlottesians, it came just 1 year after the previous election for mayor and city council. That was all due to the census and other and COVID, etc. But there were 14 candidates running for three seats on school board. Two newcomers and an incumbent were elected, and there were the school bonds. All of that was decided by not a lot of voters. What was the turnout? Mary.
Yeah, overall turnout in Mecklenburg County was just a little bit over 15%. Michael Dickerson, who runs the County Board of Elections, told me that's about what they were expecting. After early voting, the number was a little over 5%. He said the board was hoping for somewhere between 15 and 20. So on the lower end of what was expected for an election like this.
So when you get your property tax increase, and it's coming, you can blame that 15% of voters, and you can blame yourself if you didn't vote, I suppose. But arguably, one of the most important items on the ballot, and one on every voter's ballot in the county, I think the only one on every voter's ballot in the county, was the $2.5 billion bonds for schools. It passed, despite that property tax increase that will be forthcoming as a result. Do you think, Mary, Steve, I'm not sure to ask this question of, do you think that voters connected those dots, considering that every other bond referendum that I have ever experienced in this county, they've always said it will not raise your taxes. This time they said it will. But do you think people connected the dots?
You know, when you went, I kind of read it, when you went in the booth to vote, and it was a pretty long paragraph about the school bonds. And at the very end, it did say, what was that? You guys may, y'all may know the language exactly. It did make a quick reference to a possible tax increase, but it was kind of, you had to read a lot of words to get there. Now, there was a kind of campaign about it. There was a lot of talk, but if you went into the booth not really knowing, it would be very, very easy to miss that point.
Eric.
I just go back to the general lack of awareness. I mean, we're talking about 15% turnout. And then out of that percentage of people, how many were really highly engaged other than knowing that it's a huge number, $2.5 billion, and that, you know, the schools are deteriorating? I don't know that a lot of people did connect those dots. The opponents certainly did, but I don't know that. Well, clearly, if they did, they still voted for it.
So 63% of those 15% of registered voters said yes to the bonds, including Bobby Caldwell in West Charlotte and Shelley Crawford in Northwest Charlotte.
Get up, get out, and vote. Do not sit at home, because every vote matters, every vote counts.
The way Charlotte is growing and the way Mecklenburg County is growing, it's essential. We've got kids going to school in trailers.
But Jonathan Lang, who's an attorney in Huntersville, and David Tondreau, who cast his vote on the bonds at Montclair Elementary, were among the 37% who voted no.
My biggest criticism of CMS is that they are not, in my view, forward-looking. For example, you can look and say, how many housing units have been approved? Well, maybe we're going to need to build something. And that instead, like, what I'm looking at right now is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 14 trailers here. They're not thinking ahead. They should be proactive instead of reactive, instead of, oh my God, we have all these trailers here.
Every time we've passed school bonds, they've passed, and the schools haven't gotten any better, so I don't think money's the issue. Personally, I think CMS needs to be broken up into smaller groups and reduce the amount of overhead involved in the school system.
So for them, this was not a yes or no on the money or even the construction project. It was a referendum on how the schools are being run. Is there any way to know if they are reflecting the opinions of a greater number of people out there than we might imagine?
Well, if they are, those people weren't motivated enough to vote. Right. So there's your answer.
Well, saying that serving the minority party is worse than a dental appointment, Charlotte area State House Representative John Autry, a liberal Democrat, announced this week, Steve, that he will not be running for re-election. What more did he have to say?
A lot of it was that dental appointment line, Mike, you know, that he's been in the legislature since 2017, and he said it just wears you down to have no power, no recognition, and, you know, so hard to get anything done. Now, Autry will not run again. His is a safe Democratic seat, so a new Democrat will run and will replace him. But the Democratic Party, there are a handful of open legislative seats that they are trying to find candidates for, because you've got Rachel Hunt is running for lieutenant governor and Wesley Harris is running for treasurer. So there's a few places where they're trying to recruit candidates to keep their what's essentially a monopoly on all the seats in MEC.
And he's been there for a while. Wasn't he also on county commission or city council prior to going city council?
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to something I know nothing about. It is the only the second season for Charlotte FC, rocky though it was. They went to the playoffs, but now the team has announced it is firing, or it has fired its head coach, Christian Latanzio, and an assistant coach. Any explanation as to why?
That's so unusual for the Tefer organization to be undergoing change and rapid change at that, but we will grapple with that shocking development. The line coming out of there is that even though they made the playoffs, they still finished in ninth place as they did the season before, and it was only because Major League Soccer expanded the wild card round that they reached the playoffs, and the feeling is that they underachieved in a lot of ways. They gave up more late game goals than anyone else in MLS. And so now they will try and restart with their third coach in three seasons. I should add, though, Mike, that for all the internal strife, the support is still there. They finished second out of 29 teams in attendance this year, so they're still very popular with their fans.
This is a trend that we've detected here, and in writing about this in the Charlotte Observer, Scott Fowler, the great Scott Fowler, pointed out that since David Tepper has owned the Panthers, there have been five head coaches, five since 2018. You do the math. That's about one a year. So what might this mean, this firing of Christian Latanzio, mean for Panthers head coach Frank Reich, who I think lost again last night to the Bears in an ugly game, evidently?
1-8, 12 punts last night. So Amazon was delivering that package of joy to America. He's only in his first year, Frank Reich. I think it would be hard to fire a coach in his first year. The speculation seems to be more running on Scott Fitterer, the GM. But as we just outlined, Mike, David Tepper, not afraid to change personnel.
May I remind you that Charlotte FC's first coach lasted a mere 14 games before he was replaced by the late Latanzio. And WBTV spoke to Philippe Cardenas. Now, he's a soccer writer for The Athletic. He says, this is not a good look for Charlotte.
I think for an expansion side, for the to have the third coach in 3 years, it looks like you're continuing to start over. One thing that front office members and executives always say is what leads to success is stability. And right now, Charlotte just doesn't have it.
It doesn't have stability in coaches, but what about how the team played this season? I mean, they made it to the playoffs, but just barely, and they did so after a really up-and-down season that was marked by an inability to hold on to leads late in matches. Was this the right move, then? You guys are soccer fans. You go to the games, you and Joe. Eric? Joe, go ahead.
Go ahead, Joe.
Fans aren't particularly sad about this decision by Mr. Tepper. And you know what? As a Charlotte FC fan, I will say that it was maddening being in the lead and then just all of a sudden having to settle for 1 point because it was a draw. And, you know, I think this is a good fresh start for Charlotte FC to bring in someone. Players have been thanking the coach for his service, but as far as diehard fans, not necessarily surprising or upsetting to them.
Is that a personal opinion or is that coming from North Tryon Street, the home of Channel 9? Because we have a quote, we have a cut here from Jorge Torres, who was spoken to by the people over at 1 Julian Price Place at WBTV, and he has a slightly different outlook on this.
I didn't want to be the club to have a third coach in his third year. And I was like, professional sports-wise, that's not a good look. You kind of have no choice but to accept who they hire, who they feel is best. And it's a wait-and-see kind of game.
Any comment?
I think Joe is standing on his previous statement. I think Joe...
I stand by what I said. Go on the Charlotte FC message boards, look at the publications that are dedicated to this team, and the vast majority of people, I would say, would disagree with that.
So given the track record that Mr. Tepper has with coach, and God knows it's his team, it's his money, he can do whatever he wants to with it. We shouldn't be Monday morning quarterbacking here all the time because...
Slow down, Mike. He's using a lot of other people's money to fund these ventures.
But is it going to become, if we keep going through... If we keep changing coaches like we change our socks, is it going to be difficult to attract really good coaches in the future?
Well, I think it's
money.
You have to find the players. So whatever that formula is, you got to have the players and you got to pay people. And they certainly have not done that on the NFL side in terms of finding the players yet. Soccer, I think it's still a little too early to say what this team is going to look like, long term.
Okay. Joe?
I would agree with that. Soccer's very much in a honeymoon phase still. Eventually, the pressure will turn to winning, but I think a lot of people are happy we just have a team still. With the Panthers, Ashley Stroh over at CNC explained it to me like this last night, actually, that we keep trying to patch flat tire. And at some point, you just need to replace the tire in terms of like a full rebuild. You just got to embrace it. And I think that we're getting to the point with the Panthers where it's going to be, they're going to have to make dramatic changes in terms of fully rebuilding and committing to it and preparing to be that good team in the next 5 years as opposed to necessarily throwing money at patchwork and maybe trying to get a last spot in the playoffs or something next year. So just something to keep in mind.
So finally, with regard to Charlotte FC, the search is underway, obviously, for their third coach, but they don't have a lot of time because the new season begins in February or March. And we're saying February or March because they haven't set the schedule yet at the national level. Will they be able to attract someone that quickly, and will it all come down to money?
Oh yeah, they'll be able to attract someone. I mean, they're only 29 teams. Is there the 30th is coming in, okay. 25. So yeah, these jobs are in short supply. The question on the pay is an interesting one. We don't really have a sense from Charlotte FC what they're willing to pay and how that would stack up with the rest of the league. So that's a really good question. I think some of that will be indicated by who they hire.
So might Megan Rapinoe or Mia Hamm be available?
It's Megan Rapinoe would certainly be available. She's playing her last game on Saturday. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's a rhetorical question. Okay, let's move on to something very serious here. Fentanyl is the latest drug scourge to plague the country and perhaps the worst ever, given that it only takes a tiny, 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 minuscule amount to kill you. And the lives it is taking have come from people who didn't necessarily know they were taking fentanyl. Here in Charlotte, CMPD has unveiled a new campaign targeting teens and younger people to educate them about the dangers of fentanyl. How would you, those of you who have seen these ads, describe them?
Well, they said,
I'm sorry, Mary was first. Go ahead.
Well, CMPD said they wanted to start a conversation, and if my social media feeds are anything to go by, they certainly accomplished that goal. Obviously, a lot of these ads use, I guess slang is the word that is popular amongst teenager these days. Things like these pills are sus, or we don't ship you in fentanyl, things like that. So really an attempt to try and connect with younger people. That being said, certainly a lot of jokes going around.
It's full of popular vernacular, and sus is one of those words that you just pointed out. And so we turn to CMPD Lieutenant Kevin Pietras for a definition.
Sus is a shortened word for suspicious, okay? There's something going on with that. There's something not right, quite right with that. So no lie, or this is the truth, those pills, talking about street pills, those purchased not from a pharmacy, not prescribed from a doctor, are suspicious. There's something wrong with those, and we should stay away from them.
There's no question he's right, but the question here, it becomes, do young people... or not already know that, and will they listen? We'll talk more about some of these other ads and the language being used in them, which might make them sound like old people talking to young people. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks and the Local News Roundup on 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Steve Harrison is here. He's WFAE's political reporter. Joe Bruno reports on many things, including soccer, for WSOC-TV. Mary Ramsey's a local government accountability reporter for the Charlotte Observer. And Eric Spanberg is the managing editor of the Charlotte Business Journal. So we're talking about these new ads that they have produced, many billboard ads and others, that CMPD has produced to tell young people about the dangers of fentanyl. And it's getting a lot of reaction on Twitter, people making fun of it because of the language. Some of these ads say things like, "We're not fronting. This is meant to stand out," with the hashtag "street pills kill." Another reads, "The only Fenty we like is the beauty brand, Rihanna." Will the target audience hear that message coming from the cops?
I think Rihanna should hire you to do advertisements. That was great, Mike. Bruh. Not fronting. I hope the target audience receives these messages. I hope it's certainly, yeah, they're going viral. And I think that can also be the silliness or the cringeness of these messages. more people see them, hopefully somebody sees it and, you know, they chuckle or they roll their eyes, but at least it leaves a mark on them and it stays with them. I think this is it is an interesting strategy, but if somebody does those billboards catch your eye, and if it does make an impression on somebody, it will be worth it. It should be part of a multi-layered strategy. You know, there are fentanyl test strips, for example, for people who use drugs. They're starting to pop up more and more on college campuses. So if you are going to use cocaine, you could test it to see if fentanyl is in it. That's another resource that people can look into. Opioid settlement money is starting to flow into communities, including Charlotte and Mecklenburg County. They're going to be putting a lot of effort into preventing fentanyl deaths and preventing overdoses, helping people with treatment, things along that nature. But in terms of this strategy, it is, if it can catch the eye and make an impression, I think that's a success.
And I think that's the danger here. This is truly important information. And because people are reacting to these ads in a way that's a little flippant, maybe we're losing some of the message. The Observer, however, is doing a series on fentanyl this week because CMPD says that Charlotte is experiencing a 20% increase in overdoses this year, with fentanyl being the main culprit. There have been as many as 137 deaths attributed to the drug this year. And again, you can't predict who's going to use fentanyl because you're not going out to buy it. It's laced in pills that shouldn't have it in it in the first place. And one of the things that kind of disappeared in the Republican presidential debate this week was a comment made by, of all people, Vivek Ramaswamy, who said this is not, these are not overdoses, these deaths. These are poisonings, because fentanyl is poison. What's the angle that The Observer is taking on this series, Mary?
Yeah, the series you're referring to was reported by my colleague Julia Coyne, and what she really dug into was the effect on exactly the audience CMPD is targeting with this ad campaign, young people, especially teenagers. She delved into the preponderance of drugs in schools here in Charlotte, how easy and frankly cheap it has become for young people, especially young people dealing with chronic mental health issues, which we know are also on the rise among teenagers, to get these drugs. And the preponderance of drugs that do contain fentanyl and other incredibly harmful substances that can change a young person's life in a moment.
Joe? Unmute yourself.
There are a lot of parents who listen to this program of college-age children, and I think that with Thanksgiving coming up, it would be a good time to have a candid conversation with your college student and say, if you are thinking about using drugs, cocaine, consider getting a fentanyl test strip. There is a website called Dance Safe. It can connect you to fentanyl testing strips. They aren't that expensive. It's just an extra layer of protection, because it is really scary right now, the amount of people who think they're taking one thing and it is something different.
And evidently, a particle of fentanyl can kill you. I mean, just a tiny little particle of it can kill you. And I guess having Narcan around, the naloxone, is that what it is? The shot that reverses overdoses can be helpful as well. We mentioned last week that authorities say that much of the state, including Charlotte, is in a drought. And this week, over 50 firefighters worked to put out a fire, a wildfire, in the Powderhorn Mountain area of Watauga County. And Governor Cooper declared a state of emergency there to help fight wildfires. How is this fire, however, connected to the drought? Joe?
When's the last time it's rained? Think about it. It's like we are in serious need of rain, and it's particularly a concern in the mountain communities. I think back, I think it's 2017, we also experienced a drought like this, and it caused some significant wildfires in the Morganton area, and that the firefighters spent all Thanksgiving trying to put them out. Right now, there is a couple wildfires popping up in the Watauga County area. There's one near the Watauga-Wilkes County line. They've been attacking it for the past couple of days. It hasn't spread too much. Certainly a concern, though, especially for the people who live nearby.
And forestry officials also reported 6 active wildfires west of I-77, including Henderson County, where a home was destroyed earlier this week. And yesterday, Channel 9 meteorologist Keith Munday informed viewers that the haze we are experiencing is due to those fires. Fires have broken out in record numbers in the American West over the last several years. Canadian wildfires blanketed New York City and Philadelphia and Washington, D.C., and even a little bit in our area with wildfires a couple of months ago. Are we now joining that party?
In terms of, yes, I would say yes. But unlike the past couple of times when smoke has been in the air, this wildfire smoke isn't coming from Canada. This one is coming from our backyard in the state.
And the western part of the state and the mountains are in moderate to severe drought. Here in Mecklenburg, we are at stage one. We mentioned last week on this program that authorities would be monitoring lake levels and would close boat launches as necessary. And they've recommended water conservation. Meanwhile, the Huntersville Fire Department had to battle a large fire burning in East Huntersville on Wednesday night. And there was a brush fire along Interstate 77 on Tuesday. On Wednesday, Lake Norman was at 94.5 feet. That's well below its 97-foot target. All of this did not happen overnight. So why are we just now becoming aware of the drought?
You know, I don't know, maybe we're paying closer attention to it, but certainly, I mean, we haven't gotten significant rainfall in what feels like months. So I think that over the next couple of weeks, we might hear more targeted messaging from local governments and municipalities about conserving water. Certainly, this is something that people in the mountain areas like Beach Mountain have been living with for quite some time. So maybe the messaging kind of depends on where you live and just how much you're impacted.
So we'll be covering this in more depth next Wednesday on this program. We'll be talking about the drought and fires and what we need to do about all of this Wednesday at 9. Charlotte is about to lose, or may be about to lose, an iconic eatery. Brooke Sandwich Shop is on the market. This is happening 4 years after the shooting death of its co-owner. Is that connected in some way, Eric, or is this simply a monetary or a retirement age decision?
This is more of a retirement family decision. As you say, Brooks has been a fixture 50 years in Charlotte, and there is some discussion of maybe the owner's children doing food trucks or something like that. Originally, they were going to keep the restaurant as part of whatever the redevelopment would be. Now, that is not the plan. The one thing for people that are ready to rush out, that's great, but you might be able to go a couple times because this is a tough time for commercial real estate with high interest rates. So until that property is sold, the burgers will remain available to everyone.
Good news, partially. Last December, State Auditor Beth Wood had a little automotive mishap that caused a stir, and now she has been indicted. Steve, expand on that.
Yeah, so the indictment, like you said, it stemmed from this Christmas accident when she drove her car on top of another car in Raleigh. It kind of stems from that. This was an investigation, a Wake County grand jury investigated her for misusing her state-assigned Toyota Camry, for driving it around town or out of town for hair and dental appointments, things like that. She was indicted. She had previously said she would not run for re-election, and then this week she said she will resign as of December 15th. Reporter Brian Anderson said that it was, in a way, part of a deal that she will, by resigning, she will avoid a criminal trial and keep her pension.
If you looked at the photograph of that accident, I'm not sure how it happened, because her car literally was driven up onto the back of another car. Wake County District Attorney Lauren Freeman alleges that Wood used official vehicles for personal trips. Is that the basis for the indictment? Does the accident itself and that photograph play no role in this at all?
Yeah, that's right. The specific indictment is about the misuse of her state assigned car. And of course, if that accident had never happened, I think it's probably clear that this investigation would not have happened and she would still be in office. But they are two separate issues.
So, Joe, the Hamas attack on Israel several weeks ago that resulted in thousands of deaths and kidnappings and a hot war now between Israel and Hamas and other areas in the Middle East has local reverberations, or had them this week. The library was going to host and did host a pro-Hamas speaker, Itof Room, an author. What can you tell us about that?
At last week's fundraising event for the library, Verse and Vino, one of several authors featured was Itof Room. She's a Palestinian-American and a New York Times best-selling author. She, a couple days after the attack in Israel, posted a 9-slide post on Instagram that included a line saying Hamas decided to retaliate and resist. That line is deeply hurtful to some members of Charlotte's Jewish community, and they raised alarms about her presence at this event prior to it happening. The library decided to stand by the decision to include her at the event, claiming that they have always stood for freedom of expression, even in times when they don't agree with the speech. However, what members of Charlotte's Jewish community and Commissioner Lee Altman are saying is, why invite someone who is bringing such pain to the Jewish community when we wouldn't accept this for any other class? Why are Jews on the receiving end of this hatred and uncomfortableness and fear? And they're also saying freedom of expression doesn't make sense in this case because they are talking about terrorism, a terror act. So they were very disappointed in the library not only platforming this speaker, but also standing by the decision to do so.
So both the Charlotte Business Journal and WSOC-TV reported this week that the Panthers are considering changes to their practice fields next to Bank of America Stadium, according to a rezoning amendment that they have filed. What are they considering, and why is this even in the news?
Well, I think anytime the Panthers and the Tepper organization make changes, that makes news. So that's, I guess, why it's in the news. They're looking at adding outdoor fields. They're looking at maybe moving the parking that is near the practice bubble that is on that property. And Mike, what all of this seems to stem from is the fact that they abandoned that Rock Hill project, which was going to be their training headquarters. They've got to at least make some temporary changes. Remember this. In 2018, when David Tepper bought the team, one of the first things he said was that the practice and training facilities were out of date and not up to contemporary standards. Well, 6 years later, nothing's changed.
And the reason I asked why is it news is because it's going to happen. First of all, because they're the Panthers. And secondly, because Tracy Dotson, who is the assistant city manager who oversees economic development, told the Business Journal, quote, "We support any changes they need to make to the practice area." Will these changes impact any other organization, any other person, any roads, etc.?
No, I don't believe so. It doesn't look like it from anything we've seen.
So last night, you skipped the Panthers game. You and Joe skipped the Panthers game and decided to attend one of the biggest games in college basketball in Charlotte, a Final Four rematch of the Iowa women's team against Virginia Tech. This was billed as the biggest women's college game of the season and the highest grossing in sports history. I only have 30 seconds here, but you were there. I'm told it was packed, right?
15,000.
It was loud. 15,000 what?
15,000, which is a great crowd. And Caitlin Clark, the star, had 44 points, so it met the hype.
I should ask, which team won?
Iowa, by four. Iowa.
Was that at all surprise? Who won the Final Four game last year?
That would be Louisiana State University. Okay, I don't want to be smug about this, but
Iowa and Tech actually did not play in the Final Four. They were both in the Final Four. They did not face each other last year.
Okay. So, finally this morning, a passing to note. Waylon Cato Jr. died this week, a Charlottean. He was the co-founder of the Cato Corporation. That's a Charlotte-based women's clothing business with a national footprint. But his name is also on college buildings all over town because of his passion for education. He was instrumental in starting the Cato School of Education at Queen's University of Charlotte, where he also endowed the Wayland H. Cato Jr. Chair of Leadership at the McCall School of Business. Cato Hall houses various services for students and employees at UNC Charlotte, and they named the Cato College of Education building in honor of the Cato Corporation and its support of the school. And Central Piedmont Community College also named an entire campus off W.T. Harris Boulevard for him. Wayland Cato Jr. died just days after his son, 75-year-old Wayland Cato III, an award-winning artist, passed away. Wayland Cato Jr. was 100 years old. Wow. Eric Spanberg from the Charlotte Business Journal, Joe Bruner from WSOC-TV, Mary Ramsey from the Charlotte Observer, and Steve Harrison from WFAE News. Thank you all for the hour.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.